Right, welcome along, everybody. We've got a podcast with a difference today. We're actually on location, nowhere particularly glamorous, but we are in the wonderful Railway Tavern by Liverpool Street Station. And the staff have been brilliant, by the way. They've sorted us out properly. Now, the good news is we've got a special on the Seville Derby and football in the city of Seville. We're joined by Colin Miller, who's a Spanish football author now, and Terry is here, of course, as well. Terry, you can start. You used to live in the south of Spain. It was your favourite game. What did it mean to you? Why was it so good, the Seville Derby?
I think there's an element of surprise for an English person going out, living in Spain, and starting off by scouting. And Sevilla and Betis, Malaga was the area where I was based, so they were the teams I would go and visit. And just being blown away, initially by the atmosphere in the Sevilla Stadium, by the atmosphere in the Betis Stadium, and then anticipating and waiting for the derby with a little bit of intrepidation, because before the first derby I went to, I was aware of the fierce rivalry in the city. I got to know the city in terms of how passionate a city it is about everything, not just football, about everything. And it's the most Andalusian city in Spain. So if you want to go and get the flavour of Andalusia, then the city of Sevilla is the place to go. When the feria is on the festival, it's an incredible sight. So I was anticipating the derby with a little bit of fear, if I'm being perfectly honest, because I knew the fierce rivalry. It didn't disappoint. It's really fierce. And to this day, it's hard to put it above the Clásico, because in general, despite the last couple of seasons, in general, they go a long way to deciding the title race, whereas the Sevilla derby doesn't, of course. But I part of me thinks it's my favourite fixture of the season. We've got some other good derbies in Spain, but I think this one is the best derby for all the traditional values that we value in England, in the UK. This one fits the bill perfectly, more than any other derby.
Right, so Colin, tell us your story. Why you? Why did you write this book?
Yeah, well, obviously the book itself, it's called The Frying Pan of Spain, and that sums up Sevilla as a city, sums up Andalusia as well. It's what it's known as. It's known for sort of like the stereotypical version of Spain. If you kind of have a version of Spain in your head, that's sort of what Sevilla and Andalusia represents. The heat, the sort of passion, the flamenco style music and everything else. And it sums up so much. And Sevilla actually was the first major city in Spain that I visited. And for the first time I visited it, I fell in love with it. And as Terry was saying, it's a city that it sort of captures your heart very, very quickly. It doesn't leave much of the imagination. You go there and it's just a sense of sort of people who live there seem to be very happy, and that's partly to do with the weather, it's partly to do with the culture, and it's certainly from a sort of British point of view, going over there and experiencing it was eye opening, and I fell in love with the city, and then I started going to the games there, and every time I just wanted to go back more and more frequently, and eventually I was lucky enough to go up and actually live in the city, and obviously experience the derbies for time between Sevilla and Betis. And again, as Terry alluded to there, it's they're matches that are special. They're very authentic. And I think that's what makes it stand out within Spanish football, is that they have a proper inner city derby. If you look across the rest of Spain, most of the derbies are regional. They're maybe between different regional clubs. The only one that, obviously it's a standout one, that compares is the Madrid derby, where you've got Real Madrid and Atletico. But by the same token, there's always been an ascendancy in that derby. Real Madrid have always been established as the major club in that city, arguably as the major club in world football. So within Seville, it's different. Seville's very, very split. It's 50-50. As I keep saying, families are split by this derby. There's very little sense of, whilst there's a couple of sort of general ideas of what Sevilla fans represent and what Betis fans represent, essentially they're more similar than they think, and it's a case of there's fewer certainties, and it's led to a lot of, how should you say this, a lot of sort of conspiracy theories between the sets of fans in terms of who's been favoured by the authorities in recent years, and that sort of goes right back to the foundations of the clubs themselves, and even the history of the clubs when Sevilla changed their foundation date from 1905 to 1890. That in itself caused a lot of controversy and a lot of talk, and it's just one of those things that in a city like that, you can't escape the rivalry. You can't escape the sense that these are two clubs who are constantly trying to outdo each other. They're constantly trying to have a laugh at the other's expense as well. And it makes it particularly intense. And you can see that even if you're just watching the games on TV, you can see it through the atmosphere, through the colours, through the noise. The experience is unique in football. It's one of those true derby matches within European football that are probably dwindling almost by the year, in the sense that this is very authentic. This is a game where if you go to a Barcelona Real Madrid game, there's so many tourists within the stadium and the ticket prices have been so distorted that I think you lose the authenticity of those games somewhat. That has not affected either Sevilla or Betis. These are match day experiences that are the true thing, and it's just something that stood out for me, and I think that people tend to overlook it because it's not Madrid and Barcelona. People tend to overlook the rest of Spanish football, but these are stories that I felt needed told, and the more I experienced it, the more I researched on it. It was the two clubs have such fascinating, enriching histories that I just thought that there's so much here to learn, and it's so relevant to the wider Spanish football and the wider Spanish culture as well. It was such an enjoyable experience to live there and to research it further.
Is it genuinely 50-50? Because when you look in from outside, if we went out in the street now in London and said, which is the biggest football club in Seville, because Sevilla have won those European trophies, I think people from outside would say Sevilla are a bigger club than Betis. I'm sure Betis fans would disagree. So as a neutral, which is the biggest club?
It depends how you define size of a club. In terms of success, in terms of trophies, both historically and contemporarily, Sevilla are without doubt the successful club within the city. They have won 5 Europa League titles, 2 more than any other club in Europe, and the fact that came within a 10-year spell was just remarkable. But Sevilla have always been like that, right back to their foundation. The Andalusian Championships, they won 18 of the 21 versions before the league system really came into play in Spain. They were the club who always were in the ascendancy. And there's various reasons for that, which I attempt to delve into and reflect within the book itself. So why then do Betis have higher attendances? Why do they have a wider fan base? And this is probably one of the most fascinating aspects to it, because Betis, after the Civil War, Betis had won their first league title and only league title in 1935. The Civil War then starts in Spain, the squad gets disintegrated, and Betis essentially go into financial meltdown. Some clubs were hit particularly hard by the effects of the Civil War. Betis probably, arguably more so than any other, they went into financial meltdown, and essentially they went down to the third tier of Spanish football, which is, as it is now, it's regionalised, it has essentially no reach outside of the matches and the clubs themselves. So what happened was that Betis ended up going around the regional Andalusian teams, the towns, and as the club from the capital, as the club from Seville, the capital of Andalusia, they attracted a notoriety of gaining a lot of fans from throughout Andalusia, throughout the little pueblos that exist throughout the area, whereas Sevilla were playing matches in Madrid, in the north of Spain. So for the fans of Sevilla, they didn't get the chance to see their team as regularly because they were going further away. And it was a sense that Betis just have got relegated and sort of faded into mediocrity, they wouldn't have gained the fan base that they have today. But it's the sense that they got so bad, they had such a rock bottom for the best part of a decade, from the 40s through to the 50s, that they built up this massive reputation of having an extremely loyal fan base that travelled everywhere. And through that reputation, they then gained further fans through the pueblos, through little towns around Andalusia. So, and that was sort of coupled with the sense that Andalusia is probably the poorest in terms of the economy in Spain. So the Andalusians, the diaspora across Spain, started in the 50s and 60s as well. So as Betis were, as their fan base was growing and growing, ironically, to the sense that the team had plummeted, the migration within Spain itself meant that there was a lot of Andalusians went to live in the Basque Country, went to live in Catalonia, where there was more jobs, there was more economic prospects. And I think it's within Catalonia itself, there's over 30 Betis Peñas today. So it shows you that no matter where Betis play within Spain itself, there tends to be a big travelling support because they have support throughout Spain. Sevilla are arguably the team of the city. In terms of who lives within the city, there are arguably slightly more Sevilla fans. That would be my anecdotal experience, but it is very, very split, and there's been a number of surveys done to kind of show who has more fans, and it's always it always sort of contradicts itself, 60-40, one way or the other. It always causes a lot of controversy and people arguing one way or the other. So, I mean, there is no answer for this, but Betis are a larger club within Spain itself, within the city. I think Sevilla might edge it. And, of course, with their European success, a lot of people would associate Sevilla as the club of Seville. If you say Real Betis, even the typical English or British fan, they might not even be aware that they play in Seville. Mm. And that is maybe something that I kind of thought as well when writing this. I wanted to reflect the fact that this derby is so special and there's so many little contradictions to it that it's very hard to nail, to pinpoint exactly where the truth is. But I've attempted to do it the best I can, of course.
Right, I'm fascinated by, as an Englishman, I don't get politics and football clubs because we just don't have that concept, do we? There's no sense that Sheffield Wednesday fans support a political party and Sheffield United fans support a different one. So how is there that split in Seville? But are the Betis fans one thing and the Sevilla fans another thing? Does the politics work in Seville?
Yes and no. Historically speaking, I think that there has generally been a split along the lines of where clubs would have drawn their support bases from traditionally. And we spoke about there how Betis had a tradition of playing regionalised football, essentially, whereas Sevilla were the bigger club in that sense, playing in the top division. And I think the Betis stadium is located near an area called Triana in Seville. And Triana, and I've written about this in the book because I think it's very significant in terms of the identity of the clubs. And again, it's important to speak about the identity of Spanish football fans. I mean, you mentioned politics, and in Spain, you're not just a Betis fan, you're not just a Sevilla fan, you're a Betico, you're a Sevillista. Right. And it's the same with Real Madrid and Barcelona. It's not just, you don't just support the team, which I think is more of a theme in English football. You buy into this sense of what a club stands for, what a club represents. And Sevilla and Betis represent different things. I think Sevilla, as we spoke about, they're a club who are focused on winning titles. They're a club who have traditionally challenged at the top end of Spanish football. Betis haven't. And I think that creates a sort of psyche within the fan base that we are a bit different. You know, Betis fans see themselves as a bit quirky. There's a famous phrase that they use, Manqui Perda, which is, we support the team even when we lose. You know, we might not have a champion team, but our fan base, they are the champions. You know, our fans will not be beaten. And they're both very passionate. And to see it, to go to both stadiums, you get a very different match day experience. If you go to Sevilla Stadium, whilst the atmosphere inside the ground is fantastic, the stadium's surrounded by a shopping centre, surrounded by lovely bars, and it feels, I wouldn't say it feels sanitised, because that would be massively underplaying it. But you feel like you're in the centre of the city. You feel like you're very well connected to the rest of the city. When you go out to the Betis Stadium, and it's disconnected. There's two bus services go out to the south, to Heliopolis, the area that they're based in. So it's not easy to get to. So if you're a tourist coming into the Seville and you want to visit the Betis Stadium, it's just tougher. It's been made harder, and there's been a long-standing, what's the best way to describe it? It's been a long-standing issue with the Betis fans that we were sort of, you know, we were hard done by, because they cut the tram service that went out to Heliopolis in the 40s, and the guy that was in charge of the Seville public transport at the time was a confessed Sevilla fan, and there was a sort of conspiracy theory stemming from this that, like, you know, they're making it deliberately difficult for Betis fans to go to the games, and that is, I wouldn't call it a myth, there's a degree of truth to it. But that is sort of, it's one of the many things that make this rivalry so unique, is that within the city itself, there's a lot of conspiracy theories of who, you know, like, we are a club who've been unfairly done by and whatever else. And again, that sort of works into the psyche of the fans. So does politics play a part? As I said, I don't think it does contemporarily, because the families are split. You know, people, you know, the way Seville works is the Betis fans marry Sevilla fans. Their kids,
right,
their kids are made to choose one or the other. I think often it's a very difficult decision for some of them. But again, historically, I think Betis fans are maybe been a little bit more working class. Again, I think maybe people like to see this in black and white and think, you know, there's a club who represent you kind of the well-to-do within the city, the sort of señorito culture within Spain. And whilst I think Sevilla, maybe there's a little sense of that, I think that comes more from the fact that they were founded by English businessmen who were within the city, and they were always a club who were well-funded, whereas Betis, even in the Imreal, Betis Balompié. Balompié is the Spanish for football. Betis wanted to identify themselves right at the start as we're not a club who... We're a Spanish club. We're a team of the city. We're a team of Andalusia. You can even see that within the colours, the green and white colours. The name Betis derives from Baitis, which is the Roman name for the city itself. So there was a lot of thought put into this by the locals who founded the club, that we want a team that represents Seville. We want a team that represents Andalusia. Now, at the time, Sevilla themselves were maybe seen more of a, you know, we're a team who've come from English businessmen who started it up. They maybe attracted fans who were slightly more from a middle class, well off background. No, those are sweeping generalizations, but there is that is essentially how the club started. Obviously, over the course of decades and centuries that have gone past, it's blurred. The social divisions have blurred. There's less of that that goes on now, but those are identities that have formed the clubs themselves. And I think that people tend to look even at other cities, the Barcelona Espanyol split. There's very clear split within the identity of are we wedded to Spain, or there's a fan base who are more associated with Catalan independence or with Catalonia itself, which is what Barcelona essentially are. Even within Madrid, you can see the politics within Rayo Vallecano, mm-hmm. In terms of representing the Barrio of Vallecas within Madrid. Real Madrid have always been associated, again, similar to Sevilla, but different in a sense. They were always associated with success, with trophies. And Atletico Madrid, maybe slightly more similar to Betis in Seville, is it kind of they were traditionally seen as the club who might represent more of a kind of working class culture within wider Madrid. But again, there's so many contradictions within that even during the Civil War, Atletico Madrid essentially became Atletico Aviación because they were the team of the Spanish Air Force, and there's a lot of evidence built up that it was actually they were the club who were associated with the early stages of the Francoist regime, but maybe people from outside Spain would associate Real Madrid with that historically, because through the 60s and 70s, that's when they had incredible success within Europe and within Spain. So you have a lot of contradictions, and you have a lot of things that kind of work against each other. So it's very hard to define exactly what the clubs stand for themselves, but the fans, they see the clubs as a way of life. They see going to the stadium. If you go to a better stadium, the streets surrounding the stadium are full of just people drinking, people essentially partying. With Sevilla Stadium, it's a little bit more people are going into bars and restaurants before the game. You know, it's all very well serviced.
There's Starbucks there, isn't there?
Yeah.
It's the only Starbucks we could find in about 200-kilometre radius of Malaga. When we were living in Malaga and we went to Sevilla again, we had the shopping centre and get a Starbucks before the journey on the way home.
And a very important point to this as well is that most Spanish cities, and I've lived in several Spanish cities. A very good example is Vigo in Galicia in the northwest, and Celta de Vigo were obviously a club who have established themselves within the top flight of Spanish football. They've had success in European football too, but there's a very palpable sense that whilst, you know, there's 15 or 16,000 people go to their matches, Real Madrid are the club who attract a lot of fans in Vigo, and that has traditionally just been the case. And even within other Spanish cities, within Malaga itself and other parts of Andalusia, Real Madrid are huge, Barcelona are huge. Within Seville, it's different. You see kids running around in Sevilla tops and Betis tops. It's a different identity, and it's a little bit unusual for British and English fans that, you know, you kind of have your one club and that's it. You know, in Spain, people sort of have preferences for several teams. Most people prefer one of Madrid or Barcelona. Most people maybe have a preference for the team of their city, or even a smaller team within their region. It's an odd mindset if you're coming from an English point of view, but it is different. There's a very different sense within that. But in Seville, you're either Sevilla or Betis. There's no one or the other. There's no grey area. You have to choose. If you live there, if you're from there, you have to choose one or the other. And there's a lot of pressure to do so. And it's just that's another sense of the passion and the intensity that people take with football clubs and take the fandom.
That's a great point you make, Colin, because even in Malaga, there was an obligation to choose either Real Madrid or Barcelona and support Malaga. So you had to choose. You couldn't just support Malaga and kind of like Real Madrid and Barcelona and just enjoy watching the Clásicos. In most cities in Spain, you have to choose one. you have Real Madrid or Barcelona, and then you support your team. And in a lot of cases, it's not easy to find actually who their preference is. So say you're in Malaga and you choose Real Madrid over Barcelona and you support Malaga. When Real Madrid play Malaga, I'm pretty sure that a lot of them would still want Real Madrid to win.
Oh, really? Depending on...
Yeah. Because the importance... If Malaga were fine to stay up, that might be different. But importance, if Real Madrid were to drop points against Malaga, it might cost them lead against Barcelona. So there's a kind of... It's fascinating how that works.
Does that lock in the domination of Real Madrid and Barcelona?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think that most Spanish football matches that I've been to that don't involve either Madrid or Barcelona, you will usually see either tracksuit tops or whatever else of the clubs represented within the stadium, because they just have such a massive reach that is, as I said, most people prefer one or the other. And again, I think it might be unique within Spanish football culture that's the case. But certainly, I wouldn't go as far as to say that it waters down, say, use the example of Malaga, if it waters down the local support of Malaga itself, but it creates a different type of atmosphere. And obviously all these clubs substantially raise the ticket prices whenever Madrid or Barcelona come to town anyway. You'd often be paying over €100.
Yeah, it was costing Malaga, the cost of a season ticket was the same price as a ticket for the Real Madrid or Barcelona game. So a lot of people on there would buy a season ticket and miss out on those two games and double their money, basically. €120 for a season ticket and €120 for a ticket for one game against Real Madrid and then one game against Barcelona. You can imagine the equivalent if we had to in this country, if we were obliged to, you support Middlesbrough, I support Spurs, if you then had to choose between, historically, in my lifetime, Liverpool and Man United, or use those two as the two biggest. You would have to, so when Liverpool plays Spurs or Man United plays Spurs, whilst I support Spurs, I'd be looking at over the years thinking, oh, this is an awkward one for me today, because if Manchester United lose, Liverpool might win the league, or vice versa. It's something we don't have in this country. Thankfully, I think. Do you? Would you say that? Would you agree with that?
Because
we have a number of big teams now, particularly, don't we?
Yeah.
So we don't have this obligation. You've got to choose Liverpool, Man United, for example.
I wonder if it's going that way because we're of a generation that wasn't as TV dominated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whereas slightly annoying point, but for many years you could have been a Barcelona or Real Madrid fan in England or in Belfast and watch every single game. So you could watch every single game of Messi's career. So there's I think it weakens the link with your local community a little bit.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think again it's a modern sense that football in general is going towards this elite, that you're either an elite club or you're not an elite club, you're a have or a have not, and a European Super League almost feels inevitable because of that, because these clubs have such power and control and finances over everything else.
We'll campaign to stop it.
Yeah. Right, let's have a break before we launch the campaign to stop
the next train comes in.
Super League. Yeah, you might actually be able to hear, we are literally, it's the railway tavern, and there is a railway somewhere here. The fittings keep shaking. Right, let's have a little break, and we'll be back with more drinks and more chat later. Welcome back. We are talking with Colin Miller, the author of The Frying Pan of Spain. So it's a book about Seville, about Real Betis and about Sevilla. It's coming out soon. It's not quite available yet. So we've got an exclusive preview and a chat to Colin now. So tell us about the match day experience. Actually, you both can, because you've been to loads of them as well, Terry. What's the rivalry? Is it a hatred? Is there a little bit of friendliness in there? How intense is that?
Hatred, I agreed with.
Right, okay.
Friendliness, I then thought, yeah, there is actually.
Right, okay.
But not on a match day.
Right, okay.
Definitely
yeah.
not on a match day. The two teams, two sets of supporters march from one end of the city to the other. So even though the Betis Stadium, as Colin was explaining, is more difficult to get, Sevilla supporters will march there, Betis supporters will march from their stadium, which is not uncommon in Spain to do some sort of march, some walk to greet the team buses, which is a ridiculous experience, watching outside a Betis team turn up at Sevilla Stadium and the Betis supporters with their flares, the Sevilla supporters with their flares, the two coaches pulling into the stadium. It's pandemonium. They do often don't allow supporters in from the away team for the first few minutes of the game. Yeah. And my recollection of the Betis supporters turning up at Sevilla was about 10 minutes into the game. You've got helicopters flying around the stadium, following the supporters on their march. And then the recollection I have with the Betis supporters coming in was just announcing themselves by setting fire to the top tier of the stadium with flares and burning flags. And it was an announcement 10 minutes into the game that the rest of the 40-odd thousand supporters were waiting for, I'm guessing, 1,000?
Yeah.
Because they don't get many tickets at either stadium, same as the Clasicos. I think you hear stories that Clasicos were 200 or 300 away supporters at the stadium.
Yeah.
So it's 99%. Likewise in the Sevilla derby. But when they announce themselves, they send out 20,000. So big intra, a big arrival by the away supporters. Normally when the game's kicked off for safety reasons, I've not seen anything like it. I played in Liverpool Man United derby. I played in North London derby. Wimbledon against Millwall, Coventry against Leicester, other big derbies. I've never seen anything like this. It's like a South American city. I think that's what makes it different to not only in Spain, the rest of Europe.
Yeah.
It's like watching a derby in Rio de Janeiro. It's in Buenos Aires. It's hard to explain it. I've never seen any comparison. So I would always recommend a game to go and watch. Go and watch any Sevilla game. Go and watch any Betis game, experience it, but if you can get to a derby and experience the weekend in that city, it's brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think as Terry said, that was a very good point about the South American aspect of the city, because I mentioned earlier that many people might see Seville or Andalusia as being typical Spain, and it's probably closer to South America in terms of its culture. And that's a sense that a couple of centuries ago in Sevilla was hugely was actually probably the richest area within Spain, and then the migration to Latin America and to South America, Seville had the influence over the culture of what we now associate Latin America and South America with. So that's almost been transferred with football fandom as well. And again, it's this sense that it's the colour, the passion, the noise. It's very, people express themselves. People are very, very expressive in the south of Spain. People will say that maybe in the north, that's one of the sort of fundamental differences, that maybe people in the north maybe aren't quite as friendly, aren't quite as outgoing. Again, there's 100 reasons behind this. Part of it in the south is that you've got this sort of al fresco culture where, you know, it's constantly sunny. People are constantly eating outside, drinking outside. People are very laid back and everything else. And on the match day in a Seville derby, it's incredible from start to finish. The games are probably typically played in the evening or later on in the day, so each club will have its own little routine where they usually have a light training session in the morning, but that training session will typically be attended by 5,000 or 6,000 fans. Yeah. They will be there with their flags, with flares and everything else, and they'll be singing their songs right from the morning onwards. And even the teams then go back to their team hotel, and they're then sent off on their bus. And there's again, it's thousands of fans there, and it buys into this sense that this isn't just the team you're supporting. This is your club. You're a Betico. You're a Sevillista. This is what you do. It's not a sense. You don't just go to the match. You just don't turn up and then you go home. You don't really analyse the game itself. You want to win at all costs, of course. But this is a sense that this is who you are within this city. And these sort of cultures and traditions have been here for decades, and they're there to stay, because this is not going to change. And again, you sort of said earlier, is there a hatred or a friendliness within the city and for the clubs? And I don't really sense that it's either, but it's more a case that there's definitely an underlying level of mutual respect. No, neither fan base will admit it, but it's there, it exists. I think they know deep down that, you know, that these are clubs who face very similar challenges, especially in contemporary football, and especially within the sense that Spanish football fans have been hard done by, so to speak, by authorities in terms of kickoff times, in terms of ticket prices, and a lot of the time I think more so than in English football, that fans tend to unite slightly around these issues. There's slightly less of a, we are wedded to this one club and we can't agree with any other fan base. I think there's slightly less of that on one level, because I think they see this as like, essentially we are football fans, and this is such a huge part of our lives that there can be this, there can be an odd moment in a sense that these people come together and unite. But on match day itself, that's all set aside, and it's hugely passionate. There have been times over the years when there've been unsavoury moments, of course, when both outside and inside the stadiums. I think that has died down recently, and again, that's a major part of the book, in terms of how the rivalries changed and evolved over the past 10 or 15 years. I think a large part of that was down to the death of Antonio Porta, and at that moment, just before he passed away, the tensions were particularly high between the clubs and a boardroom level, between two highly contentious presidents who weren't even particularly liked within their own fan bases, if truth be told, yet they were the men who funded the clubs, and who hated each other, and who set the tone of mistrust, and that led to a number of unsavoury incidents, as I said. And when Puerta died, there was a real sense that this wasn't a Sevilla player dying, this wasn't a footballer dying, this is a tragedy for Seville. And the same, a very similar thing happened 5 years later when Mikel Roque died, the Betis defender. He passed away after a battle with illness. And again this is a sense that there's such a respect within the clubs, that these are fan bases who are from the same city, who are from the same region, who face a lot of similar challenges, and when these tragedies happen, they do come together and they do unite. Now, obviously within match day itself, that is set aside, but the rivalry itself has changed within that past decade, and there has been a sense that, you know, like we are so passionate about our city. There's a sense of, quite a lot of people I spoke to said there's a sense of narcissism about people who come from the city, because the city itself is so beautiful. You feel very associated with it, you feel very proud of it, you feel very proud of where you're from. So I think that again is something that both sets of fans unite with, and they feel very strongly about Seville, they feel very strongly about Andalusia. And it's a case that when you see that from an outsider's point of view, when you see how things have changed for the better, through such tragic circumstances, of course, but it shows that there's much more to this rivalry than just football. There's much more to a Spanish football fan's perspective than just the football match. There's so much more to it than that. And again, those are themes I've tried to explore and try to justify as best I can. And I'm sure we'll talk about it too, that there's such a divide within Spain between, there's 18 regions, and each region has its own different identity, its own different way of viewing itself and others, that it leads to a lot of stereotypes, and often a lot of division. And I think that in itself creates a sense of unity within the clubs who are from those areas themselves. And again, when you speak to a lot of people, maybe more so in the north of Spain, and you talk about Sevilla and Andalusia, and they say, well, you know, that's an area that has traditionally been, it's been the poorer area of Spain, it's the area that struggled economically, and they tend to think, well, you know, people from Andalusia can just be, you know, they can just be lazy, and they can just be people who are from this background that isn't as hardworking or as a sort of blue collar city as our own, and those stereotypes, they're not helpful, but it is a different culture, and obviously there's a lot of variation, and it's important not to overplay it, but within the north of Spain and within sort of Catalonia and the Basque country, there's a huge difference in how the cultures have developed compared certainly to Andalusia, and I think that sort of manifests itself too within the fan bases and within Spanish football too.
Right, we're just about done, so we'll wrap it up there. Last question for both of you. Do you, in your heart of hearts, have a team? Are you Betis or are you Sevilla?
It changes.
Yeah.
I tend to go with a team that's suffering as opposed to the team
I'm with you. Yeah.
That's being successful.
Yeah, you feel like a cheat if you're supporting.
Betis have got relegated. Really well. Yeah. I've been keen for them to come back up, because I want to see the derby again. And then I think it does change. I think I'm lucky as a neutral. I can choose whichever team is playing the nicest football at that particular time that appeals to me. So I'm lucky that I don't have to pick. So I do change. Mm. Same with the Madrid and Barcelona aspect as well.
Mm.
There's various parts of the career that I've had watching Spanish football where I preferred one set of players to the other from either team.
Yeah.
So we're fortunate we can do that.
Mm.
I suppose I have to be very...
Colin, you're going to have to know you.
Yeah. I'll have to be very diplomatic in my response to this. I mean, again...
Half the city's not going to buy the book if you have the wrong answer.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, whenever you go there, as I said, there's a huge pressure on anyone to make a decision and to choose one club or the other. And again... I'm not just saying this for the sake of it, but whenever I was researching the book and researching the clubs and their histories and everything that's gone on within both of them, and they've both in very different senses had to overcome a lot of obstacles, and there's been so many moments where you think that you feel a large degree of either sympathy or of empathy with one club or the other, that, you know, it's very hard to have a negative feeling towards either club. And I think even within the wider context of being a Spanish football fan, I think Spanish football needs a strong Sevilla, Betis, because there's always a danger that Real Madrid and Barcelona, because of their stature, not just from Spanish or European football, I mean, these are two of the very, very biggest clubs in the world, that for the rest of Spain, there cannot be a complete separation. Spanish football is a lot more enjoyable whenever there's a very strong top flight. And I think there's 7 or 8 teams within Spain who are much bigger than the rest, and Sevilla and Betis are within that top bracket.
I agree.
And I think they are two of the clubs, alongside Atletico, alongside Valencia, Athletic Club de Bilbao, even Real Zaragoza, who've obviously struggled a lot in recent years, but these are clubs who are hugely important, who have huge fan bases, and who have so much potential that if those clubs are struggling... And what's happened a lot in recent years is you've got a lot of smaller clubs coming up in the La Liga, which is obviously fantastic in a different sense, and it's great to have their moment in the limelight. But there's such a distortion in terms of how clubs operate, in terms of their budget and everything else, it's a valid criticism of Spanish football that it just is fundamentally unfair in terms of how some clubs have a budget 10, 20 times the size of their rivals within the same league. And obviously we've seen this season Getafe doing extremely well. I mean, to finish 5th is arguably the achievement of major European football this season, just simply because they had an operating budget of about €30 million, whereas Barcelona's is about €650 million. It's crazy, the discrepancy. And so you do need these clubs to do well, and I think you also need the derby. I mean, you need derbies like this. You need there to be more than just El Clásico. You need there to be more than just a Madrid derby. I mean, it's fantastic for Barcelona if Espanyol are doing quite well. Obviously, they're back into Europe after this absence. And if there's a strong Espanyol, that creates a sense that, you know, there's a new derby here. That these are two big occasions in the season. So it's the same with every city. And I think these games and these clubs are so big within Spain itself. And I think it's probably about time that... those of us outside of Spain as well started to give them the credit they deserve, and hopefully my book can help do that. But I think looking to the future, both clubs are in a position where they can certainly challenge within Europe, obviously, as we've seen up Sevilla and to a lesser extent Betis in recent years, but these are clubs who've got the potential to push on and to really make a mark.
Good answer.
Are you going to
politician's
answer?
Are you going to answer? I'm the same. It feels like cheating if I say Sevilla because they've won more. But I do like Sevilla. I've seen Sevilla more. I think they were the first Spanish club I saw, and I was taken aback by their fans singing in tune, in unison.
Yeah, both anthems are great.
Yeah. So I was sort of there first, but other parts of me tell me I should be more Betis because of the being part of the community, because... You know, it's that rooted sense of the club. So, yeah, I don't know, again, I've not. Right, we'll leave it there. So, Colin, just remind us, August the 12th?
The book's out on August the 12th. And hopefully I'll be able to do a little bit of a few events, certainly within London and in Seville itself. So hopefully it all goes to plan, and it's certainly something to look forward to on the 12th of August.
Cool. Right, look out for that, everybody. Buy the book, The Frying Pan of Spain by Colin Miller, and we'll be back with regular podcasts again very soon. Bye-bye.